Monster Man, special episode, Early Humans.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon supporters, and in particular, of Patreon supporter Edwin, who has asked me to talk about early hominins. Oh boy, we're going to get into terminology in a moment. Let's consider it not very important. Who's asked me to talk about our human ancestors. If you'd like to be like Edwin and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and subscribe at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get access to the rewards at lower tiers, including my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I take an in-depth look at the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. I look at the heroes, gods, monsters, and mythological beings that appear in it, and how to use them and religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. So Edwin, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Okay, first things first. Last episode, I mentioned that my background is as an archaeologist. I've never really worked as an archaeologist, but my doctorate is in archaeology. But I came in through history. I did history as an undergrad, and then in my MA, I kind of transitioned over, and then my PhD was in archaeology. What that means is I was primarily interested in historical archaeology, so in the early medieval period, a period where there are written records, but, you know, we have to combine written and material evidence to understand that period. So I know as much as the next person about the early era of human evolution, maybe a touch more, because it's in kind of like the basic textbooks and things like that, but I have only a basic textbook understanding of this stuff. So if I make any mistakes, please remember this is actually not my specialist area. But one thing that I am very interested in is the use of archaeology and, I get, you know, biological anthropology in the popular media. And when we're dealing with fantasy games, we're really talking about the way that these beings, these species, are used to tell stories. And that's actually more relevant to a game, and it's something that I know a little bit more about. So we're in luck there. So to define my terms, hominins, I'm probably going to call them homonyms at some point in this episode because they're very close words, but hominins are those group of human-like species that we're looking at. They are a subset, as I understand it, of hominids, who are them plus some other ape species. We are dealing with species whose existence is often attested by a comparatively small number of fossils and whose dates have ranges that exceed all known history, right? So the error markers, like the plus or minus in some of these dates, is longer than human history. By history, I mean the existence of written history, which is only about 5,000 or 6,000 years. So these are the things that were the humans of Earth for the vast majority of time, right? Anatomically modern humans crop up a couple of 100,000 years ago and, you know, originating in Africa and then spread out from there, moving into the rest of the world where they sometimes encounter other species of hominin. Anyway, my point is that the species names are not always precise, the timeline's not always precise, we're dealing with very fragmentary evidence, and that's, you know, there are species that sort of used to be thought to exist that have now been collapsed into other ones, and it's just, that's kind of how this goes. You know, we are doing the best we can with the limited evidence that we have. But most of this is worlds away from the popular image of the caveman, and you just have to imagine me making the air quotes gesture as I said that, the caveman. But there are quite a lot of caveman-like monsters in D&D. Probably the most obvious is one that appeared in the Creature Catalog, the book that we're currently doing on the show, which is the Man, Primitive. But if you wanted to, you could think of creatures like the Yeti as being a type of hominin, right? If, you know, if we're supposed to assume that the Yeti is some kind of what used to be called a pithecanthropus, then sure. And there are a lot of monsters that are presented in a kind of caveman-like way, by which I mean they've got like a big club and they're wearing an animal skin. So the Norker would be one example. The Hill Giant. The Germling. And this comes out of the way that these hominids kind of tie into different ways of seeing the world. I'm sure you're familiar with that image, the Ascent of Man. You know the thing, the kind of sideways view of, you know, a fish crawling out of the water, and then it becomes something, and it becomes an ape, and it becomes like a chimp, and then it becomes, you know, Homo habilis, and then it becomes a Neanderthal, and then it becomes a whatever, and ultimately comes to be an anatomically modern human. And very typically, an anatomically modern human that looks like the person that made the image. We'll get to that in a moment, but this was not an uncommon view in the 19th century, that people wrote about these species within a context where they tended to assume that biological evolution was a sort of linear progress, that it was teleological, by which I mean that it had a specific end goal, and perhaps that that end goal was them. So through all the different primitive levels of society, society would evolve, and then eventually it would reach us. Victorian England, the perfect society. There's the hand quotations again. And this was often used as a justification for all kinds of injustices, right? Because if we are a more advanced society than you, then we can inflict our society upon you because we're helping you. And even in sort of progressive contexts, you still see this logic. So Star Trek as a setting is very much founded on this idea that societies develop, and that they develop in a predictable way, that there are societies which are ahead of and societies that are behind. And that's as much the Federation refusing to get involved with other earlier societies because of the Prime Directive as it is hyper-advanced godlike energy beings pushing the Federation around. So that means that these early hominins were portrayed as inferior to, less developed than, their anatomically modern human successors. You can see this with the portrayal of Neanderthals, who we'll get to in a moment, as primitive brutes that crops up in some literature, right? So H.G. Wells portrays Neanderthals in what are they called? The Grizzly Folk, the Grizzly People, whatever that is. I forget the name exactly, but again, he portrays Neanderthals as sort of, you know, monstrous primitives. Same thing like The Quest for Fire. And that all comes out of that late 19th, early 20th century view of what Neanderthals must have been like. So on the one hand, the image of the quote-unquote caveman is a powerful one that we recognize. The image of the ignorant brute. Like, you can still see this today. There's a commercial that plays on YouTube for a personal grooming product, which contrasts the well-groomed modern person who uses the personal grooming product to the primitive cave people who don't, and who are, you know, shaving their various shavable parts with sharpened stones. So early hominins tend to turn up in fantasy fiction in one of a couple of different ways. The most obvious is with that image of horrible brutes. So an example of this would be Michael Crichton's The Eaters of the Dead, which is a novel based on the writings of the early medieval geographer Ahmed ibn Fahlan, and it then got made into a film, The 13th Warrior. In that, the cavemen, the Neanderthals, are presented as primitive cannibalistic brutes who essentially exist to be orcs. They're there to, you know, prey on the weak and the innocent and have to be stood up to by the heroes. And they're essentially a way of putting a fantasy monster into a story that is not otherwise fantastic. That is this completely ridiculous notion of, you know, cave complexes full of extinct hominins in early medieval Europe. But it's not like there's magic or a dragon or something. Indeed, there's sort of very explicitly not a dragon. So some people have used cavemen to kind of stand in for monsters in stories that are not otherwise supposed to have monsters in them. I mean, in fact, I call this a fantasy novel, but, you know, in terms of its framing and in terms of what Michael Crichton otherwise writes, it's more like a science fiction novel. Another fantasy author who's used pre-anatomically modern human hominins in his work is Michael Scott Rohan. Now, I've mentioned The Winter of the World quite a few times, but in The Winter of the World, The Winter of the World is set during the Ice Age, and it has, as the kind of like dwarf and elf equivalents of the setting, it has these other species of hominin. So the dwarves are Neanderthals. This might be a moment to say something about what is a Neanderthal. Neanderthals are one of the latest. They appear a little before and overlap with what we would call anatomically modern humans, AMHs. We tend to portray them as short, but actually they're probably not that much shorter than the humans that they interacted with. The debate is ongoing whether they ought to be considered their own species, Homo Neanderthalensis, or whether they ought to be considered a subspecies of Homo sapiens. So are we Homo sapiens sapiens, and the Neanderthals are Homo sapiens neanderthalensis? It turns out that speciation is a very complex topic. And there is a good deal of evidence to suggest that Neanderthals were much more sophisticated technologically and culturally than the stereotype of them as, you know, primitive brutes whacking things on the head with clubs. There's evidence that they were, you know, that they were building vessels and sailing, or crossing bodies of water anyway. There's evidence of making art, so things like flutes. And none of this is 100% conclusive, but I believe it's there. But it has been suggested. So basically, I would say that over the kind of 20th and early 21st centuries, we've been revising our estimates of Neanderthal cognition and Neanderthal societal complexity because we no longer assume that the thing that is later must necessarily be better, I guess, that if that makes sense. There is a film that's about this, Ow, the Last Hunter. I think it's a French film. People don't speak very much in it, so it doesn't really matter. But that's about kind of the contact between Neanderthals and anatomically modern humans, with the idea that modern humans essentially wiped out the Neanderthals. But in the Winter of the World books, the Neanderthals play this role of the dwarfs, a society set apart from, but not completely separate from, the sort of majority population of Homo sapiens. And then there are other creatures that are hinted at, you know, that are other hominin species, possibly including some that are semi-arboreal, that kind of play the role of like fairies or forest spirits. And then finally, the kind of 13th warrior version of the primitive Neanderthal also appears in the works of people like Robert E. Howard. So Conan often fights kind of primitive or degenerate humans who are often depicted with the features that one would expect from depictions of Neanderthals in that era, and sort of the idea of the kind of a former folk who've been banished to the underworld, something that turns up, for instance, in the Howard story, The Worms of the Earth, I think is connected to that idea. So how do we translate these into a role-playing game context? I think we have to be a little cautious. Well, I mean, maybe we don't, right? As we've looked at basic D&D, we've seen that it tends to have a somewhat pulpier aesthetic than AD&D, and that pulpy aesthetic kind of justifies cavemen. It's interesting, this idea of primitive cultures, when you have a D&D setting, which is often, you know, a setting that is by our standards kind of primitive. I feel like the primitive brutality of, you know, a Paleolithic culture, not that I'm saying that Paleolithic cultures are brutal, but, you know, quote unquote, primitive brutality of a Paleolithic culture and the primitive brutality of a medieval culture, I mean, they would recognize one another. So we have to think a little bit about how we make these creatures different from, say, a Norker or a Grimlock. Grimlocks are particularly challenging because they're presented in a very kind of caveman-like way, but they're clearly intended to be something slightly different than Morlocks from the Time Machine. The thing is that a fantasy world like a D&D world is full of sentient species, all of which are effectively human. But I think that the first thing that we can do with these species, with these hominin species, is establish some kind of connection, right? There's something affecting about discovering that the monsters that you're encountering are, in some fundamental way, human. There needs to be a moment of recognition. Something where, if we're going to take our monsters and really make them alien and other, these are the ones that we don't do that to. Where there is a message of shared humanity. Of course, that relies on your player characters being human. The second is to incorporate some idea of history. That these are, in some sense, the ancestors of the player character society. Now, this could be done in like a time travel scenario. There are time travel scenarios for basic D&D. Again, I'm on the record of not being that excited about time travel in Dungeons & Dragons unless it's relatively short. And the reason for that is that the relatively recent history is the only history that the players are going to have any kind of connection with. If I'm going to travel back in time and I'm going to get to meet Queen Elizabeth I or Lasu or Mansa Musa or somebody, I'm going to be excited. You know, Hildegard von Bingen. I'm going to be excited because I already have ideas and feelings about that person. But if I'm going to travel into the distant past of a fantasy setting and, you know, meet King Ambulgar I, like, I don't have strong opinions about that guy. Asterisk, Glorantha. But in general, no. So I feel like this can be a challenge, but I'm sure there are ways to make it work. I do think that you can deal with the idea of the historical interactions of different hominin populations. So, for example, you know, it could be that these people believe that their ancestors came into this valley and defeated the orcs and drove them up into the hills. And then when you go up into the hills, the creatures you meet are not orcs at all. They're just a somewhat different type of human. And then you have to ask yourself, is this kingdom that I'm fighting to defend in predicated on an injustice, on a lie? It gives you a situation that's a little bit like the one with the Hutakans, but first, the difference is that the Hutakans are kind of villains who had it coming. They're just in a sad state now. And secondly, it doesn't, you know, do the thing where it equates real world humans to monsters. Although I guess I'm equating real world humans to a different species of human, which is also kind of, you know, like there's no reason for them not just to all be regular humans, is there? I guess the idea is that if this happened a long, 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 long time ago, you could have that. I guess, do you think the Pukul men, the you know, the wild men, the Woodwoses in The Lord of the Rings are meant to be Neanderthals? Is Gon-Buri-Gon a Neanderthal? I think he might be. That's probably obvious to everyone else, but it only just occurred to me. I do think that this works a little bit better in a relatively low magic world, where the you get that kind of pulp sensibility. You know, if you're playing something like, if you're playing in one of those like slightly grungier, you know, post-OSR or OSR games where monsters are all unique and there aren't things like tribes of orcs, then fitting in some other species of hominin can maybe kind of let you skate that line a little bit. And there you can kind of have that moral question as well. But I think that maybe the most interesting thing that you could do with other species of human is actually just to make them the player character races. You know, what if instead of, you know, what if you went the Winter of the World approach? What if instead of humans and elves and dwarves and halflings and half-orcs, you had just all different kinds of human? Neanderthals could fill in your dwarf role, although they're not that dwarven. Maybe you make the Neanderthal the default setting, and then you make Homo sapiens sapiens some kind of weird specialist species. Like, oh, those guys are kind of our technology experts. They're so good at that kind of thing. And then, like, regular folk are Neanderthals. Sadly, the real big bruisers like the Gigantopithecus was once thought to fit within the hominins, but I believe is now considered to be just an ape. But this is a fantasy game, so we can have a 9-foot-tall orangutan as our kind of burly, muscly subspecies, and then maybe partly arboreal species like Paranthropus robustus. Like, they could serve as maybe like a halfling sort of equivalent in the setting, you know, but they could live up in trees. I think that might be fun. I say Paranthropus robustus as halflings because they're in that kind of size range. Paranthropus robustus, an adult male, is about 4 and a bit feet, so a bit under. It's like 1.4 meters or so for my metric listeners. So I think that that could be a lot of fun. Now, one thing that I want to recommend is not to get too hung up on kind of scientific accuracy for these things. You know, one of the things that I've learned trying to write historically inspired gaming texts is that you can't ever have that 100% kind of accuracy, because historical accuracy and making claims with 100% certainty are opposed concepts. So, you know, being true to the history and expressing doubt are ideas that go together. So you're going to have to buy a, you know, middlebrow book on hominin species, maybe even from 20 or 30 years ago, and just use those species as your guidelines in terms of, you know, how big they were or whatever, and what their characteristics were. Don't mind that it's wrong, because it's these species don't coexist that much anyway. You know, you might wind up with two species that lived hundreds of thousands of years apart. So what? It's a fantasy game. There's no reason they couldn't have existed at the same time. They just didn't happen to. So I think that that's got a lot of fun possibility to it, and I think that there's, you know, some RPGs recently have started to address kind of Stone Age technology. There's an Osprey RPG that has a Stone Age setting that I can't... Paleomythic, that's the name of it. I haven't read it, but I wonder if you could work something like that into a Paleomythic type of game. I don't know, just some thoughts. So I guess that's my look at using early hominins in a Dungeons & Dragons game. I think they can be used if you want a monster that has a strong connection to the player characters, but I personally want to be cautious of reinforcing the idea of a linear development of humanity, which on the one hand means that there could just totally be Neanderthals in your game, but on the other hand means that you have to be careful lest you rob them of their mystery. But I really do like the idea of an all early hominin player character party. I think there'd be a lot of fun to be had with those, especially when you think about their different linguistic capabilities. But that's a whole other topic. All right. So Edwin, I hope that you enjoyed your special episode. Everyone else, if you'd like to be like Edwin and get your own special, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. Or if you'd prefer to pledge at a lower level, you can do that. I'm not the boss of you. In our next episode, we'll be having another special episode, and this one's all gonna be about the folkloric seasonal bad guy Krampus and how to incorporate him and other similar seasonal monsters into your games. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.